The accessories are all just handcrafted. I love watching them on Instagram put their stamp their logo on the belt, the care that's put into it. Experience the comfort of their signature polos, outerwear, and other accessories that are cleverly designed to keep you in the swing of everyday life. Check them out today at InwardHalf.com and look for them in your favorite pro shop, Inward Half. And now we're talking golf, Sam. Can we go to the Masters leaderboard update? Can I get some updates? Can you tell me who's leading the Masters, by the way?
Yes, I can tell you.
Start at the very tippy top.
One of our boys almost tied at the top here.
No, I want to start at the very top. Not almost at the top. I want to start at the very tippy top.
Well, you know, Bryson DeChambeau miraculously shoots a 65 yesterday.
The guy who sucks in the majors, that can't play in majors, he's leading after one?
Yeah, you know, it is crazy.
Wow.
The guy who's averaged almost 3 over par for 7 years now at Augusta National finally gets one in the book at 65.
That's crazy.
And what's also crazy is that Max Homa is 6 under par and almost jarred one from the fairway here at 17 to tie that lead here. So you've got Tiger's group obviously right there with Homa. That's kind of what a lot of people are looking towards. Tiger, he's keeping it together. You know, he bogeyed 14 starting off the morning.
Ah, did he?
Yeah, so he's back to even par. But honestly, all things considered with the guy, tied for 29th right now, I would feel pretty solid. Obviously, what you're going to be looking at is kind of how he can physically handle playing more than 18 holes in a day.
So far today, there haven't been any big movers, right? There's only about 15 people on the course so far, I think.
Yeah, you don't really have a ton of people that are – Homa's kind of really the only guy that's in contention, I guess, near the top that's still on the course right now.
Cam Davis is in there. But I think, is he playing his second round?
I
think, has he already started his second round? Because right now it says he's under through two.
Yeah, he started his second round.
Okay.
Scottie Scheffler, obviously a guy that we all know is going to be right there this weekend. He shoots 6 under yesterday. Feels pretty effortless. Honestly, just felt like he was kind of scrambling around the course and just still shot bogey-free 66. So he feels inevitable in this tournament. And then Danny Willett. 4 under par. That was probably the other more surprising, one of the more surprising scores of yesterday.
Basically, you know, it gets messed up a little bit with the rain delay, but like in the last 19 Masters, nobody except Tiger has came from outside the top 10 to win after round one. So like if you're not in the top 10 after your round one, and you're not named Tiger Woods, history says you're not going to then turn around and win that tournament. So important to get off to a good start. So you can kind of go ahead and mark off some of these guys who are just kind of lingering, you know, already 6-7 shots behind.
This is a great post about DeChambeau. Bryson DeChambeau shooting a 65 in the first round for the solo lead with 3D printed irons that he designed and got approved this week is the most Bryson DeChambeau thing ever. That dude's always
what
like
a loser.
Yeah,
it's so 2019. Get over it. Or 2021, I guess. It's so 2021, hating Bryson. Get over it. It's 3 years ago.
He was shouting out all his YouTube buddies after.
He's a famous streamer, bro. People love him. Get on board.
I'm not, clearly.
Anything else from day one of the Masters stand out?
Maybe some top names that have just not played well. Jordan Spieth is 2 over par and is just hitting it all over the course right now. Brooks Koepka, 2 over par. Hideki Matsuyama, 4 over. I think there were a couple guys that you thought were going to be right there kind of in the mix that have played some really bad golf.
Peter Malnati.
Yeah, our guy's tough. Yeah,
plus 10 after.
He's in last place.
Yeah, last place.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough. He got him a win under his belt and was like, I get to play. It's nice to be at the Masters, but yeah, to finish last after one round, that's tough. Yeah, Matsuyama is sinking me in some of my parlays.
Very
and
popular
stuff.
Pick by a lot of people this week.
All right, let's take our first phone call, 865-288-3131. Top of the morning to you, Roberto.
Good morning, gents. Yeah, our boy, our East Tennessee boy, and I love that he claims East Tennessee, not Tennessee, but East Tennessee on his Twitter. Malnati, he looks really bad. I mean, really bad. You know, guys, you should have known Koepka, Matsuyama, and Spieth were all going to play bad because I had him in a three-man top 20 parlay. So, yeah, there it is. If I should have probably played a bottom 20 parlay with him, that'd have been a better play at this point.
They all look rough. It's still time for them to turn around and at least make the cut. But top 20, they'll have an outside shot of if they can make it to the weekend. I don't give up on that one yet, but I had Matt Tsuyama in a top 10 bet, and that one's cooked. That one's dead. I've already thrown that one away.
Yeah. You know, Tiger this morning, you know, I don't know if you guys are actually watching it in studio or not. He actually looks really bad. He basically looks like a guy that's wagons going down the road and the wheels are starting to wobble and stuff, but he's holding it together with, I mean, he looks really bad. His short irons look terrible. His long irons look terrible. The only thing that's actually working for him right now, his putter's letting him down, is his driver. He seems to be putting it in the fairway this morning, which is the only thing reprieving him from being probably three over since he restarted. That's worrisome for an old. You know, guys, can we talk about Tiger for a second? I was an avowed Tiger hater. I was a Phil guy, and I was an avowed Tiger hater until about 2019 when he won the Masters. I was actually there in 2019, humble brag, on Monday, and the first person I saw were him. And Freddie and JT, they always play the practice rounds together. And we came in at 13, 14 tee, and they were coming over the hill. And he just looked different back then. He looked thinner. He looked more young. But as he's aged, I've actually grown to appreciate him more. Is that just old Birdo nostalgia stuff? Or is that Tiger's actually made himself more likable in the end of his career?
I think without a doubt he's made himself more likable just from a – not so much from a golf play perspective, obviously, but I think personality-wise, just watching some of the interactions he has now with, you know, the golfers he's paired with and everything else, I've seen that because I was not a fan for some of the same reasons you said back in the day. I was very impressed and admired his skills that are, you know, GOAT level as a golfer, but – didn't love the personality, and that's changed a lot for me. And so, yeah, some of that's us maturing, Roberto, but I think some of it's him too.
Mm-hmm. John, you have a thought on that?
My perspective, I always liked Tiger, but my perspective is it's easier to root for somebody after they fail. Like, we build you up, we tear you down, and then you you get the comeback. I don't know how much he's matured. I mean, I'm sure he has as – you know, he's gotten older, but he also got humbled, and I think that makes you more likable. To me, that's what it is. You root for somebody to pick themselves up and rebuild themselves.
Yeah. It'd be really cool if 5 years later he wins this again. I don't think he is. He's just barely off, it seems, at least this morning. He's going to have to come back this afternoon and figure something out. I thought he played extremely well yesterday. And for him to play extremely well and only be one under is probably not a great thing when you got a guy like Bryson DeChambeau, who might be the best heel in golf. Would you guys agree with that? You guys are wrestling guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think people hate Bryson as much anymore. I don't know who the main heel is because Patrick Reed hasn't been relevant enough. Is there somebody, Bob, that stands out? Like, I don't feel like anybody has got that mantle right now.
No, I'd say Patrick Reed's a good one, but he's so off the radar at the moment that it doesn't matter. So Bryson's definitely one that people talk about one way or another. We were just talking about, you know, how he's doing his 3D printed irons, and he's always got some angle, you know.
Anything else, Roberto?
Well, at least he doesn't look like he's on bovine steroids anymore.
True.
So good for him. John, one more thing, and thank you for asking. You know, I've loved this Masters so far. It feels a little weird, but obviously when you get into the weekend at the Masters, it's going to be great. I have a take on this Mark Pope to Kentucky thing that I think won't be popular amongst Vols fans. Everybody wants to laugh at them. I don't think he's as bad as everyone wants to make him out to be.
He might end up being a solid basketball coach, but it's still laughable that they. Yeah, and he might end up being, but it's still laughable that what they started shooting at and where they were aiming for, where they ended up. You know, he might end up being good. He might know how to coach basketball, but it's still.
I actually think he's really good.
But it's still embarrassing from them, from a program perspective, to get turned down.
Yeah, and of course, getting to laugh at Kentucky is great. And then this LSU series, I can't underscore how huge it is. We really need to go 2-1, and we could really use going 3-1, because this is crazy to say. LSU is probably the third or fourth worst team in the SEC this year.
Record-wise, they're right there.
We really need to take a series win here, if not a series sweep, because we're a little bit behind the eight ball, because next weekend's not going to be any cakewalk. I know it's Kentucky up there, but they're actually really, really, really good. Guys, have a great day. Thanks for letting me get in here, and the show sounds awesome. Take care.
Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, no, Kentucky right now in baseball. I know we've talked a lot about Kentucky basketball, and you get your yearly tradition. The J.D. Pickle guy from On Three has finally, it's like the Groundhog Day when one of those fringe national media members start overhyping Kentucky football. I saw that around midnight last night of Brock Vandergriff has got the juice and Kentucky's going to be a problem. It's every year. So we got that going. But no, Kentucky baseball, 12-1 right now in the conference. That ties our mark, you know, whenever we had that dominant season where we looked like the best team of all time. So I don't know if Kentucky is legit, Sam. Like, I know at this point we have to take them as a legit good, but, like, are they a great baseball team, or what's – how are they 12-1, I guess? Have they just had an easy schedule? Do you know? Like, are we
– No, they've been playing really good baseball. I don't know – yeah, I mean, I don't think that they've played necessarily the schedule that, like, an LSU has, where they've played, you know, an Arkansas and a Vandy and then coming to Knoxville and playing us. I wouldn't say it's been, you know, that difficult of a schedule for them, but they've taken advantage of the schedule that they've gotten. And yeah, I mean, it's
12-1.
Exactly. Yeah. I was just about to say that 12-1. It doesn't really matter where your wins are coming from. And they're not just, you know, scooting by wins either. They're winning in dominant fashion. And, you know, they're a team to definitely watch out for. I would definitely put them, you know, closer to that upper half of the SEC, kind of right up there with your Arkansas and your Tennessee and all that stuff.
They've beaten Georgia. They swept Georgia to start.
Ole Miss, I believe.
They took 2 of 3 out of Missouri. They swept Ole Miss at Ole Miss. Uh-huh. Swept Alabama in Lexington. Us losing 2 out of 3 to Alabama is just aging so poorly. And then they beat Auburn last night. So yeah, they haven't been tested yet, but you know, running out of opportunities. Tennessee goes to Lexington, then they go to South Carolina.
What is Kentucky's?
Then they play Arkansas. That's what I'm reading right now.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
So Kentucky plays Tennessee next weekend at South Carolina, home against Arkansas, at Florida, and then home against Vanderbilt. So
yeah, you're gonna know a lot about them in the next four series.
So let's just say, you know, how many losses do you think they end up with? Just if you're trying to win the quote-unquote SEC East.
Is Vanderbilt on the road for them?
Vanderbilt is at home for them.
I would guess that you lose 2 out of 3 against Arkansas, probably.
Arkansas also at home for them. So they do get Vandy and Arkansas both at home.
That's an advantage for sure. I still think you lose 2 out of 3 against Arkansas. I think they're just that good of a team. They probably win one of those home series, I would say. I think they could get a win against Vanderbilt.
So something like,
I think they've probably got like 6 SEC losses maybe down the stretch.
Yeah, see, and Tennessee's already got, what, 4? So it's going to be hard to catch them.
Sure.
You know, they got a nice little head start against you. And now, 4 behind is what I meant to say. Tennessee already has 5. Tennessee's 7-5 in SEC play. So 4 behind that you have to make up. Now, the good news is you get them next weekend. So if you sweep them.
Right.
Now, going to Lexington and sweeping them.
Easier said than done.
Much tougher ask than what you've had to do so far this season. But, yeah. Okay. Kentucky's legitimate in baseball. They're going to be
baseball school now.
Have you ever heard a friend of mine who, again, Kentucky fan, I don't know if he was kidding or not, but he calls them the Bat Cats.
Yeah. I have a friend.
It's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, one of my Kentucky friends, he, you know, always says that. He's like, oh, daily Bat Cats report. We're still playing good.
I like that.
Fun. Yeah,
it's way cooler than Vandy Boys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And a little Bat Cat.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a little Bat Cat. It's like Fat Cat, but it's a bat.
Mm-hmm.
It still rhymes. Thank you for the Masters preview, Sam. And for lunch on Monday, I'll take, I don't know, we'll figure it out. I haven't decided yet.
Might be a wash if Homa.
We only bet one lunch on the Bryson thing.
I'll pull up the audio.
Why would we bet two lunches?
I'll pull up the audio.
Why would we bet two lunches, Sam? I tried to let you bet two lunches. You're like, no, I just want the cut thing. I like to live dangerous, like you're Austin Powers.
No, you never gave me the option to bet
like
it twice.
Like you're Austin Powers, and you got 18, and you're trying to hit because you like to live dangerously.
Not true. What this is happening? I'll pull up the audio.
Sam, I usually side with you, but I'm afraid I think that's how I remember it too.
I'll pull up the audio.
Well, you're the producer, so I don't know if you can doctor it or not. I don't know, but I'll look at the audio.
You're the one that cuts the show up after. I should be the one worried about you cutting out.
I'll look at it independently. We'll get an arbiter to come in and look at it. Let's go to break.
The first annual.
Second segment, third hour of the morning show. We're heading into a weekend. We actually have good weather on the horizon. And if any of you are out there wanting to do a little camping, it's what my son's going to do, actually, I think, while he's in town with a couple buddies. If you're an RVer, if you're a camper, we've got one of the most picturesque and beautiful parts of the country to travel to, obviously. And there's also a really cool, inexpensive getaway that's available for you to set up shop, and it's just minutes from Great Smoky Mountain National Park. It's Two Rivers Landing RV Resort, a luxury venue with top shelf amenities, riverfront and riverview luxury RV sites, nestled in nature, not far from amenities that you need, like shopping and food and sightseeing and all those things. Now that the weather's turning, it's the greatest time to think about doing something like that. You can unplug from just the regular to and fro of being an everyday person. Get out there, get near the French Broad River. If you have more interest in learning about Two Rivers RV Resort, check out their website. Pretty straightforward, tworiversrvresort.com. Unmatched serenity in the heart of it all. So this just came in. We've been talking about Mark Pope and what he is up against. Two Kentucky boosters have combined funds to pledge an additional $4 million for NIL, which gives Mark Pope some immediate additional backing. So it sounds like some people are rallying to his cause. It makes you wonder in terms of... it really makes you wonder if there was some disconnect with Cal on some of this. Are these people that would have had money that they chose not to bring to the table with him? I don't know. But he's getting a decent start, at least, in terms of being able to have some money to throw at players, because there's going to have to be a rebuild on that roster. That's pretty clear.
Yeah, if it's just going to be a bidding war for players, maybe they'll grab a couple. But
Yeah, I
don't think Pope's the type of guy that's going to get the benefit of the doubt from a lot of players. Like, I still think Kentucky's recruiting class is going to be in trouble. I still think their current roster is probably going to look around and say thanks, but no thanks. Does that mean they go to Arkansas of Calipari? I'd say a handful of them do. But, like, you know, I don't think it was as simple as money and Kentucky that landed players at Kentucky. I think a lot of it has to do with Calipari. Like, I think you can say the same about Tennessee and Rick Barnes. Like, there is still the human aspect of it. Now, some guys will be hired guns. Some guys will go to wherever the money is. And I get that. But, like, the coach is still going to be a big tiebreaker for a lot of guys. Yeah. You can maybe make up a little bit of a difference with the coach, because we're getting close to the point where all these top programs are throwing money around. There's got to be a tiebreaker, whether it's geographically, like, hey, I'm from there. Because, you know, that's what Tennessee's fighting with the Belmont kid. You know, now we're in the mix with this Belmont kid who is the number one available small forward. Jamie Shaw, like, he's looking at North Carolina, Kansas, and Tennessee. And he's got interest in Tennessee, but he's from Charlotte. And they say it's going to be really tough to get him to not pick North Carolina. maybe he's come accustomed and loves Nashville. He's like, hey, Tennessee's pretty good. And, you know, this is kind of the best of both worlds. If I live in Knoxville, I'm halfway to Nashville to go back to see my friends there. And I'm halfway to Charlotte to go home and see family there. So, like, hey, it's kind of perfect. But Charlotte kid's probably going to want to play for North Carolina, if I'm guessing, especially with the way North Carolina's throwing money around. But maybe he looks at what Tennessee did with Dalton Kincaid and looks at Rick Barnes and says, hey, you know, that seems to fit me a little bit better than Hubert Davis. Same as those Kentucky kids might look and say, hey, you know, I kind of like Coach Cal a lot more than this Mark Pope guy. I'd rather go somewhere and either take my commitment there or transfer there to play for the coach I already know that I already kind of like, that I know can do things for me. In Calipari's case, that's get them to the league. In Rick Barnes' case, that's turn them into really good college basketball players while still having a chance to be good in the league. I don't know if Mark Pope is going to get that second benefit of the doubt. Money, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you can get money and go to North Carolina, or get money to go to Kansas, or get money to go play for Mark Pope, where are you going to pick?
Yeah, and the damage has been done for them already. I think they had this, you know, they had this big haul of a recruiting class again, five freshmen coming in. Three of them have decommitted already, and there's no necessarily vote of confidence from the other two. They're just remaining silent. So, again, he could be starting from scratch, and you're right. He will be up against it. It sounds like Cal's main target is Dre Davis, who's a Seton Hall transfer. Good player, really good player that could kind of tee things up for him. And then, you know, if he gets some of those freshmen that originally committed to him coming over, changes the complexion of that team quickly.
From Matt Norlander, College Basketball Insider at 9 a.m., Calipari is expected to bring all of his stable of assistants from Kentucky to Arkansas,
yep,
including his son in a player development role. So basically he's just taking the band and moving towns.
Yep.
Which doesn't really scream that he is going to evolve and change anything. It's like, hey, no, we're going to do the same thing, except Arkansas is going to like it a little bit better.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Arkansas has had postseason success, and, you know, they haven't had, like, a real dominant regular season. So maybe if they're really good in the regular season, maybe they'll take that trade-off. I don't know.
Now, there's a name that has come up bouncing back to Tennessee now. We've talked about Cade Tyson. We've talked about D-Stone, Darlin Stone DeBar. There's another name that's coming up. Igor Milicic Jr. plays at Charlotte. Kind of a wing player, but a big wing, 6'10". Averaged 13 points a game at Charlotte, 8.5 rebounds. Pretty good field goal percentage. Not bad three-point percentage, about 38%. Now, he's not visiting this weekend like the other guys are, but his name has all of a sudden popped up on the list.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, if you can just throw the money and convince both Cade Tyson, who was, you know, a big-time player. Is he just a freshman?
Sophomore.
Well, is he an upcoming sophomore, though?
No, rising junior.
Okay, so he won freshman of the year last year and then had a sophomore season. Okay. Yeah. You know, if you can get him here, who maybe has a couple years of eligibility, and you bring in D-Stone, who played at Hofstra and shot pretty well there, but had the career before that at Iowa State, so at least, like, was a big prospect at some point, or at least, you know, has some Power 5 experience. Like, to me, those are the two. And then, like, Chaz Lanier seems to be a guy that people think Tennessee has locked down.
He hasn't even entered the portal, though. That's what's weird.
Yeah, and maybe Tennessee backs off of him because of that reason. Maybe you're getting into the – was it Lurie Collins at St. Louis?
Like Uri Collins.
Uri Collins.
Yes.
You get into a similar situation there where you start getting linked so much to a player that the tampering charges become easy, so you just back off. Like, that's kind of what happened.
Yeah.
With the first go-around in the transfer portal. So maybe – yeah, because Lanier, I keep hearing, is like, hey, he wants to be at Tennessee, but he's not in the transfer portal.
Yeah, he's a Nashville kid. I've heard the same. We talked about this last week when we were talking about from last year. Southern Illinois had two guys that went to Big Ten teams, you know, and Lance Jones and Marcus Domask, and became immediate contributors. And it's like, God, man, Southern Illinois should have been good. Hofstra had D-Stone and Aaron Estrada, who's at Alabama. It's like these. It is crazy when you think about the level of talent some of these mid-major schools are having.
I think their coach will get a much bigger job here in the next couple of years. He's had a couple guards that have gone through there.
Speedy.
That have been really great. Yeah, Speedy Claxton.
And yeah, maybe that's just the goal, and that's what you tell yourself as a coach. It's like, yeah, I'll become this feeder system. It's going to be impossible to really have like a multi-year Cinderella run, but if we can put one good year together, then I'm immediately taking a job and going, you know, somewhere else, because it's impossible to have like a team that stays together at that level now. Like, those guys are going to be looking out. If you find a diamond in the rough, he's going to go somewhere better and make more money. That's pretty frustrating. Put the poll up on X. Transfer portal. As a fan of college athletics, like it or dislike it? I kept it pretty simple. Sam, where did you end up on that? You said like?
Yeah, I was kind of at the like.
Bob, were you at the like or dislike?
I was at the dislike.
60% of the people agree with you. 500 people have voted. 60% of people dislike it.
I liked it at the beginning. I don't like it now.
I think your point was a good one, John. Two of the best players that have come through Tennessee Athletics
in
a long time are transfer portal guys.
Could be three with Amick too, right?
True.
I'll say that was my point. And yeah, I mean, like, as a Tennessee fan, I don't think you really complain. But I do think you can differentiate between being a Tennessee fan and being a college sports fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, from a Tennessee perspective, I think Tennessee fans should like the portal. That doesn't necessarily mean that college sports fans have to like it.
Sure.
We are a have. So, like, we will thrive off the transfer portal. We'll win more than we lose. Like, I'd imagine you'll probably see this with Kim Caldwell. I imagine she's going to do pretty good in the transfer portal too. So, like, I'd imagine Tennessee's going to kind of remake a big part of that roster in the portal, or at least bring in some people who are going to play.
As a whole for college sports, then, I don't think it's amazing. Because, I mean, I'm a little junkie for college basketball. Like, I do think it kills mid-major basketball.
Is there not a part of you that likes mid-major basketball more, though, like, now that there's a scouting aspect to it? Because it's almost like you get to find diamonds in the rough the year before, and then, like, you know, the transfer portal, like, oh, I know that guy. No, that guy's a beast. I watched him play. And then you can kind of watch your baby boy spread his wings and go to a different spot and play. And, like, you know, you maybe the scouting is actually worth it. Because me personally, not a college sports junkie. I like the big stuff. I like the SEC stuff. But the idea of watching those mid-major games now are more appealing to me, because that guy's not going to be there for 3 years. He's going to be at a bigger program, maybe at my program.
Sure.
The conference tournament to me was way more interesting this year, because I'm like, hey, I want to watch that guy. Oh, he can play. Like, that guy's going to be somewhere else.
Maybe more the junkie in me is, like, wishing that you got more years for the storylines to develop of those teams. Like, once they get to the tournament, it's like, oh, these guys have been so good for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. They can do damage in the tournament type thing. You just don't really get that.
I probably have a little recency bias in my feelings towards it, too. My bias against it because of what we talked about, the mid-major thing. That's where I went to school, and we finally broke through, and our reward is coach leaves and all five starters leave. Yeah. You know, it's tough.
Are you going to follow them to the next level, though? Are you going to follow them to St. Louis?
Oh, that's an interesting thought. I don't know. I'll keep an eye on Schertz, because I think Schertz is in line for a bigger job as a coach.
But, I mean, your boy Avila is probably going to be there with him. Like, are you going to – I imagine to keep rooting for them because, you know, you kind of know that, hey, it's a step up. You got to do what you got to do. Like, I don't think you should have hard feelings towards those guys.
No, of course. Yeah. No, I it's the process more than anything else. What's funny is a friend of mine, again, a Kentucky fan, sent me something, and he goes, this is just nonsense. And it was a Kentucky message board saying, Mark Pope's first target should be Robbie Avila. And first of all, he's not going anywhere except St. Louis. But second of all, it's like, it just cracks me up that a guy like that, like, again, that's Kentucky thinking, hey, we just take whoever we want.
I mean, is he good enough to play major basketball? I mean, I know you guys have talked about him, and, like, you know, he's got the nicknames, he's popular and all that. And, like,
not
hey,
for
it's
Kentucky.
No,
but can he play in the SEC? Can he be a starter in the SEC?
He's kind of slow, you know, that's slow afoot. And I don't know. I think that's a different level personally. But
okay.
He's a great player, basketball player, but athlete.
He fits in the A-10.
Yeah,
like,
A-10.
He fits fine.
I think he'll be
great mid-major player.
Yeah, I think
he was undervalued at Indiana State. He can play up a step, but he can't play big-time college
basketball. That's how I feel.
Okay. Yeah. I assume that's what it was, but I just, you know, people thought the same about Jokic at a time, though. Like, I mean, he's a second-round pick and then, you know, proved he could play. So I didn't know if, you know, maybe he could have that type of impact on the college level, and, you know, not be MVP or anything, but at least like control a game. Kind of like DJ Burns. I mean, DJ Burns isn't the best athlete size, ever. Though.
Robbie's not that big.
No,
like, he's bigger, not that tall. But
he's not like as.
He's 6'10", but he's
not as beefy.
Yeah, well, nobody in the world is as beefy as DJ Burns. DJ Burns has got about as much meat as any man alive.
Even Jokic, though, you know, like he's a big boy. Like, for they play a similar game style, and I just think Avila still is a much smaller guy compared to that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about him at the NBA being able to do that, but 6'10 in college is a pretty good size. I mean, he could be bigger than a lot of the people he's going up against. I mean, him versus Jonas Adu last year, would that have been like just a huge mismatch in your opinion? And maybe it is. I didn't really watch St. Louis. I'm just trying to get a grip.
No.
He's such a like perimeter post player. It's right. Weird. You know, like he's not like a bang in the post like,
okay.
Deep guy, you know?
Like, so he's fat, but he likes shooting threes. He doesn't like going down
he
there
likes
and
passing
and
on the perimeter and stuff.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, he passes like a guard, basically. Right. He's a great distributor.
Okay.
So, but yeah, down low, he's okay.
He wouldn't fit the traditional big man role in a power conference,
I guess.
Yeah,
not
like
at
he
all.
Fits that role in a mid-major.
Okay.
Yeah, if you matched him, I'm trying to think if you would match him up against
Tolu Smith, he'd be
oh
killed.
My God, yes. Yeah, like, yeah.
It's sad that you say that so emphatically about Tolu, but with Jonas, you're like, yeah, he'd probably be okay. So, like, what are we really upset about with him hitting the portal? Like, is it just the sentiment of losing both those guys? Like,
because it's the chemistry, you know, like in the culture a little bit more than just like the talent of the player.
And it's funny you mention that because not so much Jonas, but there's a couple people I talked to yesterday. And Ryan Shumpert said this when he was on earlier in the week. We all love Tobe, and we think there's a lot of upside there. And it's still like, hey, man, we're talking about a 5.4 rebound a game guy. You know, it's.
To me, it's the combination of losing both.
Yeah.
Like, if Tobe hit the portal, we kept Jonas. Okay, cool. If Jonas hit the portal, we kept Tobe. Okay, cool. Like, it's the fact you lost both of them that makes you say, huh.
Yeah.
But, like I said at the end of the show yesterday, until someone actually goes somewhere, I'm not going to really close any doors or freak out yet. Like, once Jonas hit the portal, I would say the likelihood of Awaka coming back probably went up exponentially. Like, I'd say it probably went from, like, 10% to, like, 60%. Like, I still am in the camp that you don't lose both of them.
You think Iwaka's got a 60% chance to come back now?
I think so. I think so. Like, I think Iwaka, again, he wanted money, or maybe he wanted money. I'm not in his head, but from a logic standpoint.
Minutes and money.
Like, yeah. And, like, now the minutes and the money are opened up. So, like, I don't think, unless he's just homesick and, like, if he wants to go home to his parents and go to St. John's and be there so his parents can watch the game, maybe. But, like, I don't think he had a bad time at Tennessee. I think in a perfect world, he's at Tennessee. I think he likes Rick Barnes. I think he likes the culture. I think he likes the fan base. The fan base likes him. Unlike Adu, who got kind of got
walked out a little bit.
Yeah, like, the fans kind of turned on Adu. The fans didn't really turn on Iwaka. I think Iwaka's money and opportunity, and maybe it's maybe more so, like, opportunity than money. Like, you know, I think those are connected, but, like, yeah, so I think if his roadblock to starting minutes is gone, I say it's more likely than not that he actually returns. So I don't think you lose both of them.
And I don't want to sound like conspiracy theory, but there is some logic to if this – they again, same handler. Maybe Jonas knew he was going along. Maybe they're talking a strategy on the sequencing, you know? And
if that's the case, then that would make sense. Because I was going to say, like, to me, the rumblings were out there about Adu.
Right.
And then he put him to bed. And even to the point where I was told he told Barnes, like, hey, I'm good. We're good.
Yeah.
And then he walked that back, like, a day later. So, like, if I'm Barnes, I might be done with AD. I'm like, you know what? You gave me your word, and then immediately you change your mind. Like, I'm good. Just go on. You don't want to be here? Let's move on. Like, I want guys that want to be here. I'm not going to beg you to stay, Jonas. Like, we had a talk. You said you were good. And then you still hit the portal a day later.
The word out of Barnes' camp was, this is very frustrating. We're going to be fine. And that's it. You know, and so maybe, you know, we're reading into it a lot, but that could be some of it.
It's similar to Kumwa in that perspective. Like, I would say, like, Barnes probably preferred keeping him, but, like, I'm not going to beg you.
Yeah.
This train's going to keep rolling. Like, we'll find somebody that can play. I can coach basketball. We're not going to be devoid of talent. And I kind of understand how to put rosters together now, so we're not going to have a debacle like we did in 2020. COVID's not happening, so we're not going to have, like, you know, no practice time like we did in 2021 and have a bunch of freshmen out there trying to play. I got an idea. We'll be a top 15 program. We'll be a top 15 team with or without you. Now, if they lost both of them, like that would hurt. But I still don't think that's going to happen. I hope not, at least. Because I feel like we're a little bit too late in the game to actually get in the portal and try to get a big man. A quality big man. Adu's timing makes it worse. The fact it was after Awaka, because it does... I don't think Awaka hits the portal if Adu doesn't make the announcement on Monday or Tuesday. But like Bob said, maybe there's a reason there. Maybe there was some strategy behind there to make Tennessee a little bit more desperate to then keep Awaka around. We'll see.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on Tennessee basketball and the portal and big weekend of visits? Kay Tyson, Darlin Stone, DeBar.
The word on DeBar
those
is
are cool names.
Such a good name.
Caden Darlin Stone.
The word on D Stone is, you know, this could be just, you know, he's coming in to lock it down, and I hope that's the case. I hope we have some stuff to talk about next week about some new players versus worrying about who's leaving.
I will say that does seem to be the energy surrounding Darlin Stone, is that it's a foregone conclusion that's just kind of coming here and going to cross some T's, dot some I's, meet the teams, and make it official. Like, that way, like, because it does seem hard to say, hey, I'm transferring here without actually taking a visit there or having a prior relationship with the coaches. That just makes it seem like, hey, this people are offering me money. I'm good to go. Like, you at least got to go through the motions of getting on campus and be like, oh, yeah, feel at home here. Great opportunity for me. Tyson, I'm going to say we're probably not going to get. Like I said, it seems Charlotte, North Carolina, the money they're throwing around, I'd probably make them the favorite. But, yeah, Darlin Stone, the energy there. Because, like, the energy there just completely correlates and, I think, causates with the St. Thomas buzz completely dying down. Like, for a while, it's like, hey, St. Thomas is coming to Tennessee. And then all of a sudden you quit hearing that. And it's like, actually, Tennessee is going to look for other people. And then Darlin Stone's name popped up. So I think it was a clear, like, hey, we want you. He said yes. You back off somebody else. And it seems like formality.
Feels like if we get Tyson, and that's like a huge statement for the commitment to NIL and everything else.
Cade Tyson or Jermaine Masak, if you had to pick one.
God.
I'd still stand by Masak just because of the cultural impact. I mean, he's I consider him and Jermaine are the heart of that team right now. Not Jermaine, Zakai are the heart of that team.
I got to be honest, it hurt me a little bit that you paused so much.
Yeah.
Sam, Cade Tyson, Jermaine Masak, if you could only pick one.
I think I'm taking Masak, but yeah, it's kind of hard for me. I think if you get maybe Chaz Lanier too, I'm not as worried about losing Masak, maybe.
I don't know, man. If you lose Masak, like theoretically, like you are replacing four starters.
Yeah, it feels like you're ripping apart a lot of the fabric of this team for sure if you lose Masak.
Like, if you tell me Masak sticks around with Zakai, at least, like, you know, like, okay, like, you got some dogs in the backcourt. But, like, if it's just Zakai by himself, and all of a sudden it's just, like, him and Estrella and, like, Cam Carr, like, that is almost a new entire team. Especially, like, if Awaka is not back in that, you know, scenario as well. Sure. I still think Awaka's coming back. And that's just me talking about my gut and kind of connecting some dots and knowing what – or hearing some things about what Awaka was actually looking for whenever he was entering the portal. This Kate Tyson guy did shoot 46.5% from three last year.
No. That's the point, man.
Shooter, man.
On 5.5 threes a game.
I love culture, but you need points to win.
Exactly. I was listening to the drive, and Bear was like, oh, man, I want Masak. And he was like, you can't count toughness or something like that. And Houston was like, well, you can count threes.
Yeah, but if you can get the threes from Darlin Stone. See, that to me is, like, especially like you said with Lanier, like, if you can find the scoring elsewhere, then I think it becomes a different conversation. If it's just – because it's not in a vacuum. It's not just player versus player. Mm-hmm. It's player fitting on a team. So you both say Masak?
Yeah, I do.
I'm real close, though.
Yeah, it is tough.
I might
yes.
be, like, 60-40 Masak.
What about, and I know it's going to be impossible, but remove your affinity for Masak and the memories you have, and it's just player with Masak's makeup versus Cade Tyson.
That's where I have the problem, is giving a guy like Masak, you know, what we're assuming, like 25-plus minutes a game with just not that much offensive capability.
Now he could develop, you know, he could develop some more offensive game. He came back as a better shooter this year. You can't deny that. Like, he's gotten better offensively. Now, you know, he's still not a good offensive player, but I don't think of him as a negative out there anymore. Like, he can do enough to be serviceable, in my opinion. I mean,
he's
almost
like a net zero to me on
offense.
Well,
yeah, serviceable.
Just a great defensive player.
Well, that's fine. Like,
I feel like you can just coach some defense into Cade Tyson, maybe.
I don't think you can coach that level of defense, though.
Yeah.
I don't think you could coach. I think Mesak's the best perimeter defender in the SEC. I won't say the entire country because I don't watch enough national basketball, but like he's as good as it gets on the perimeter. You can't coach somebody to even give you like 85% of that, I don't think.
If you could convince one of these transfer guys to like come off the bench, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Hey, Darlin Stone, how you feel about 20 minutes a game? We'll play a 25 minutes a game. We'll find you the minutes, but you're not going to be a starter.
Hey, Cade, we got an extra year of eligibility. Like,
they'll probably like,
we'll ease you in on this junior year.
Probably the Lanier guy, if anything. Like, hey, yeah, buddy, exactly. You come off the bench. And then you got to worry about Gainey, too. You know,
a lot of mouths to feed.
I ask you about removing the memory zone, but that's, you can't. And then, like, if you're Barnes, like, the culture matters, and that matters. Like, that's what makes it so confusing. It's not fantasy basketball. That's what Daryl Morey has always struggled with in the NBA, is like just moving these pieces around and treating them like they're just, you know, fantasy basketball players. It's not. You got to build team.
You've had so
continuity.
Much production leave your team that, like, you're worried about the culture now. But now that you have that much production gone, you're like, well, I need to replace the production. Do I care about the culture that much?
There's a scenario where you're replacing four starters next year. At the very least, like, three. Like, that's scary.
Are you guys above your number now of yesterday of saying you need more than two transfers?
Probably.
Yeah.
I'd say, but I don't mean nudge it up to three.
Yeah.
The only other thing I'll say about Jamai is it's a, you know, and it is kind of tied to culture, but elite defender, which is hard to come by, that does matter. I don't think it matters as much as points, but that's a key component that ties into who your coach is, and that's what those Barnes teams are built off of.
Last call on the other side.
Your get ready for it.
All right, wrapping up this week of shows. Let's do a little best and worst of the week. Bob, give me your best. What you got?
My best goes to the boys from Dude Perfect.
Huh?
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Have you words I didn't this? Think I'd hear past like 2016. Okay,
yeah,
let's hear it.
Well, they're having the last laugh, man. This is what we call a byproduct of the creator economy, all right? We know what they've been doing for a while. They just scored a $100 million infusion of capital from a venture fund for them to grow their business. $100 million, nine figures.
I saw that they also have came across one of my podcasts. They have, like, their own meal now at some restaurant. Some restaurant has the Dude Perfect, like, shake or something, like you... maybe it was Sonic.
That sounds horrible.
I don't know. Are those shots legit, or do they actually use the green screen? I've seen people say the green screen, like, showed how they do them. Like, do we even know? Like, are they actually making these trick shots, or are they just tricking everybody?
I used to be a big hater of those guys back in the day.
Everyone
was growing up.
Those guys suck.
But that was like my, you know, like that was like my generation of the YouTube culture.
Yeah, you guys loved them. You guys are responsible for Dude Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah,
I hate them because I was just like, these guys,
I don't want to be part of that. I'm not responsible.
But do we know if those shots are real or fake? Dude Perfect.
I think they're, I don't know. They're doing a hell of a job if they're not real.
Well, I saw one like where somebody's in a green suit, like, and riding down a zip line off a building. So, like, they throw it, and, like, they just carry the ball, like, there, like, and like it goes, like, the flight is, and there's
like on the sky cam, basically, on like a stadium, they like zip line them.
Yeah,
down.
Exactly. And you can, like, basically take them out of the shot, and the ball flies straight, and, like, it's.
I'm going to think that's true.
You could do that for sure. Yeah, they had, what, 60 million? They have 60 million subscribers on YouTube, which is a just incredible number.
I haven't seen a video that they've made in 8 years, though. Like, who the hell's watching those? Just kids? I mean, they're famous with kids, right? Like, kids are their
target. Yeah, and they show up now on a lot of other TV shows doing stuff. And, I mean, yeah, so they're going to use the capital to build a management team, add to its slate of projects, expand beyond traditional platforms, open a headquarters in Frisco, Texas. So, I mean, they just struck gold, man. They're going to go and live their best life and build this great facility and just see if it's worth it all.
All right, what's your worst of the week?
I've had a couple worst of the week. A junior worst of the week was, again, we've talked about the baseball uniforms, Major League. Did you see the Detroit Tigers player that slid in at home?
Yeah.
Pants ripped all the way up the side when he slid just because they're so flimsy, right?
These guys look like they're sweating in mid-July and it's April.
And then the other one I would just say is the Kentucky coaching search. We've beat that up today, but and I don't care. With respect to Roberto, I think Mark Pope is a I'm not even sure that's a settle for hire. That's for a program that supposedly is a blue blood. That is a step backwards for them.
Sam, you got anything?
I had Tony Kemp. He was the one who was sent down for Jackson Holliday. He had a cool little tweet. He said, "Fall of 2010, our college had a series against the Longhorns for a three-game set. Our hitting coach at the time was Josh Holliday. His brother, who was Matt, brought his kid to our early practice. I remember watching his son, Jackson Holliday, with a sweet lefty swing. Go get him, kid." So this kid, he got sent down and was just, you know, very professional about it.
Well, I saw that quote, and then for the longest, I was like, wait, Tony Kemp? I was like, that does not sound like the right name. But
that's
now that you're saying,
guy.
Well, now that you're saying that, yeah, now there was the Dodger Kemp who was so good. Oh, that was Matt Kemp.
Matt Kemp,
correct. But I was like, Tony Kemp. I was like, that does not sound right. And I never looked it up. I was like, but now I just piece it together. And
he's
Matt.
A local guy from Nashville. He went to like my rival high school.
Oh, okay.
Vandy, but
that's cool.
He's been kind of a journeyman in the MLB, but got a lot of respect, kind of with a bunch of teams around the. Around the league.
Okay. That was your best?
That was my best. My loser was Northwestern. They're playing their games on Lake Michigan for the next 2 years.
Okay.
That's going to be the coldest thing in the world.
Practice facility, right? It's like they're just going to add seats. Yeah.
You could make both the best and worst of the week, the Kentucky coaching search. Best from a non-Kentucky perspective, worst if you are Kentucky. But my best of the week, I'll say just the impact already that Caitlin Clark has made. 36 nationally televised games for the Fever next year.
Crazy.
They have 40 games. 36 of them going to be on national TV. Yep. The Aces are renting out a bigger venue for their game. When she comes to Vegas, they're going to try to do it in a bigger arena, try to sell it out. It's like she's going to be a damn sideshow. Like she's going to be a main attraction. I guess not a sideshow, a main attraction. She's going to be a star. And this is women's basketball's chance to kind of, really grow and explode at all levels. I thought the Vegas Aces renting out a bigger venue was kind of crazy. Like, they're going to try to do it like just basically a 20,000-seat place.
Fever only had one broadcasted game this year, too, and they have 38 next year.
36 is what I saw, 36 of 40. My worst of the week, Civil War. That was a terrible movie. I was so mad at that movie. I had such high expectations for it.
Could be the people hating on Caitlin Clark, too.
Maybe. Oh, you mean just to go back to that?
Yeah.
Or you mean like the Civil War, culture war type of thing. Like, maybe that's related, too. But, yeah, it's all related. Yeah. I love me some Jesse Plemons. I love me some Kirsten Dunst. But I love A24. I was like, I'm in. I was so hyped for that movie. Not good. Not good as far as I'm concerned. 3.3 out of 10 is what I give it. But all the other ratings are saying it's great, so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just wrong. I don't know. Well, good job by you boys this week. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Hopefully Tennessee gets some commits. Hopefully the baseball team takes care of business. The G.I. Jake Show coming up next. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.